have the Judiciary Committee come to order. It is 1:32 in the afternoon of Friday, March 25th, 2011. There's a quorum here in the Judiciary Committee to conduct business. Senator Paskin is here, Senator Coghill, myself, Senator French. There are two matters before the committee today, Senate Bill 101 and HB 7. We're going to take them up in that order. And without further ado, let's turn to Senator Paskin and tell us about Senate Bill 101.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. During the past 20 or so years, many new types of business entities, including limited liability companies, limited liability partnerships, and that type of entity have been recognized under state law. As a result of the proliferation of the new entity form, many businesses now utilize various types of entities. The relaxation of federal tax laws governing entity classification has led to an increase in the volume of restructuring and acquisition transactions by and among the various types of entity forms. Because of a lack of clear statutory authority allowing transactions between more than one form of entity, these transactions have often required the use of multiple indirect steps as opposed to a single-step transaction. Additionally, due to Alaska's lack of statutory authority, our corporations are required to initiate these types of transactions in other states, meaning they have to leave this legal jurisdiction to go to other legal jurisdictions in order to accomplish this multi-step process. Senate Bill 101 will offer new statutory authority to permit cross-entity transactions in order to remain responsive to the needs of Alaskan companies and should be enacted in order to allow Alaska businesses the opportunity to engage in cross-entity transactions right here in Alaska, not having to go to Delaware or other states that have a friendlier business climate. Senate Bill 101 conforms to the Uniform Law Commissioner's Model Entity Transaction Act, which is formerly known under the acronym META, M-E-T-A. If implemented in the state of Alaska, this legislation will help facilitate transactions between more than one form of entity, improving the existing business climate in Alaska and help reduce unnecessary administrative and legal burdens currently imposed on Alaskan companies. This legislation was initially introduced by myself during the 26th legislature and was heard in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, but due to the complexity of the bill, I complied with a request by the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, as well as the Department of Law, to allow them to work on the bill over the interim. That work, and it was a lot of hard work, has been completed, Mr. Chairman, and that is reflected in what is now before us under Senate Bill 101. And at this time, with the Chair's indulgence, I would request my staff, Mr. Stepp, to come up and complete some of the additional preliminary statements.
Very good, Senator Paskin. Thank you. Let's welcome Senator Wilikowski to the committee, who came in just a few minutes ago, and we'll turn now to Mr. Stepp. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rather than walking through the committee through the entire 50-page bill, or even the sectional summary that's longer than most bills, what I'd like to do is real quickly just walk the committee through the bill packet, if I may.
Please.
I think it's a good bill packet, and basically, Mr. Chairman, what we're seeking to demonstrate with the presentation of the packet is that this bill has undergone a rigorous review by professionals and lawyers and scholars from a lot of different fields in several different contexts, and that the bill before you today has been the result of a lot of hard work. It wasn't, for example, Senator Paskin sitting up late at night trying to cook up new ideas for Alaska statutory law. So quickly, you'll see that it is a 50-page bill. That's complex and hard to understand, even attorneys with lots of experience, not unlike the three of you, understand that this is a complex bill. For that reason, we've asked Michael Garrity, who's a Uniform Law Commissioner, to be here today. Mr. Garrity lives in Anchorage and is on the telephone. He'll be able to explain the legislation in more detail and answer the more technical questions about the legislation. The bill drafter, Terry Bannister, was also asked to be present and said she would call in if available. You'll see on the fiscal note that it's a zero fiscal note. Don Habiger, the director of the corporation's business and professional licensing, is available to address the fiscal note, answer questions, and talk a little bit about the department's thoughts on the implementation of this legislation. After the sectional summary, you'll see a memo that helped initiate this process a few years ago. The memo was drafted by an attorney advocating for an update of Alaska business statutes. It's an attorney who helps some Alaska clients complete these transactions in other states. And he, in pretty layman's terms, I think, explains the necessity and the benefits of implementing this bill.
Just for the record, that's the letter from Steve Miller of Sherman Howard, an attorney partnership in Denver, Colorado. Is that the memo you're referring to?
Yes, sir. Thank you. You'll see on page two of that memo kind of what the problem is. The memo depicts the steps an Alaska corporation must initiate in order to merge with a limited liability company. Rather than completing a merger in a single step, and this is towards the bottom of page two, a corporation must first form a foreign limited liability company. Second, merge the Alaska limited liability company with and into the foreign limited liability company. Third, convert the surviving entity of the merger, the foreign limited liability company, into a foreign corporation pursuant to the provisions of that state's business laws. And finally, merge the foreign corporation with and into an Alaska corporation. Obviously, Mr. Chairman, as the memo states later, quote, it is certainly more efficient and economical to accomplish inter-entity transactions in a single step, unquote. That, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is the goal of this legislation. Next in your packet, after that memo, you will see the Entity Transactions Act summary that was prepared by the Uniform Law Commission. The ULC has been around for more than 100 years and provides states with, quote, nonpartisan, well-conceived, and well-drafted legislation that brings clarity and stability to critical areas of state statutory law, unquote. The point here, Mr. Chairman, is that this legislation has been thoroughly vetted by the Uniform Law Commission. Finally, Mr. Chairman, you will see the Council of State Governments suggested state legislation for the year 2011. CSG, as you know, alerts state elected and appointed officials to emerging social, economic, and political trends, offers innovative state policy responses to rapidly changing conditions, and advocates multi-state problem solving to maximize resources and competitiveness. I draw your attention to page 10, Mr. Chairman, of that CSG document, which depicts the specific set of criteria used to determine which legislation will appear in this annual publication. I won't read all the criteria, Mr. Chairman, but want to emphasize again that this legislation before you has been through a rigorous review and emerged from hundreds of submissions as one of the CSG's recommended pieces of legislation for 2011. It is indeed timely. Finally, I'd like to read a brief excerpt from a letter of support submitted by Norm Phillips, President and CEO of Doyon, for last year's legislation. Doyon is in the process of updating this letter, and I apologize we don't have it available for SB 101. This is what he wrote for the 26th legislature's corresponding bill. As Doyon has grown, its corporate structure has grown more complex. The passage of this legislation will help to take some unnecessary complexity out of transactions and will avoid the need to incorporate in other jurisdictions where the laws are better defined for complex transactions, unquote. In closing, Mr. Chairman, adopting SB 101 will be an important step towards bringing Alaska more into the mainstream of statutory business law. The following people are available to offer testimony and answer questions. As I mentioned, Don Habiger, Director of the Department of from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, is with us in the room. Michael Garrity is again on the phone, and Terry Bannister was going to try to be available. Regrettably, Dan Branch, who was assigned to work on this bill from the Department of Law over the interim, is not available today. However, I think we have sufficient expertise to address the committee's questions. Thank you again for allowing me to present this presentation, and I'm happy to take a stab at any questions.
Good overview. Thank you, Mr. Stepp. Questions for Mr. Stepp with the bill sponsor. We do have Mike Garrity on the line, a Uniform Law Commission member. Perhaps we can turn to him and get his perspective on the bill before we launched into too much of a detailed analysis. Mr. Garrity, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Go ahead and put yourself on the record to state your name and affiliation, if any, and then we'll proceed from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Garrity. I'm an attorney in Anchorage, Alaska. I've practiced in this jurisdiction for about 32 years. I am a Uniform Law Commissioner. Mr. Stepp touched on the Uniform Law Commission, but if members of the committee are familiar with things like the Uniform Commercial Code, the Uniform Probate Code, and so on, those are products of the Uniform Law Commission. It is nonpartisan, and most of the unincorporated association acts in Alaska, the Uniform Partnership Act, for example, and so on, were all products of the Uniform Law Commission, and they've been the primary author of those. The drafting process, I was not on this committee, but again, just so the committee understands, is a very detailed, lengthy process. The American Bar Association is always represented with formal appointees to these drafting committees. In this particular case, in the case of META, because of the complexity of the bill and because the American Bar Association has often taken the lead dealing with, for example, the Model Business Corporation Act, which was a product of the ABA, there's actually a more formal joint committee that consisted of the American Bar Association and the Uniform Law Commission that spent a great deal of time. And the record of their, I won't say their deliberations, but their correspondence, their drafts, and so on and so forth is all online and can be easily located. I'd be happy to supply that information. But this META itself was promulgated, I believe, in 2005. When I checked yesterday, it has been enacted in the District of Columbia, and it has currently been introduced in the state of Connecticut. I don't know the status of the Connecticut bill, but as one might imagine, these bills do, from the time they're promulgated, the Model Acts or the Uniform Acts are promulgated, there is a period of time before they are adopted, and so, you know, I'm happy to say Alaska is ahead of the curve in this particular one, but it has been adopted. It is currently introduced in Connecticut, and, you know, that was the information as of yesterday.
It's
always an ongoing effort in the respective states.
Just while we're on that point, Mr. Garrity, because I just maybe the sponsor wants to correct the record or keep it straight, but I thought I read somewhere that where Idaho and Kansas have both passed this. Is that kind of the state?
Well, I'll stand corrected if that's the case. I apologize if I misstated. I just looked online, and that was the information I saw. So I can clarify that, or if somebody is there in the committee room that can correct me, I'll stand corrected, obviously.
Mr. Stepp?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, there's a legislative fact sheet that is in your packet that I pulled from the Uniform Law Commission website. It's a legislative fact sheet for the Entity Transactions Act, and it does report that this legislation has been enacted in the District of Columbia, Idaho, and Kansas, and it's been introduced in Connecticut and Alaska.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I misspoke, and I'll obviously defer to Mr. Stepp, who's done his homework. But anyway, with that background, this bill was shared with the Uniform Law Commission. Each state has got its own little nuances of its own state laws. No state, or rarely will a state, adopt verbatim a Uniform Act or a Model Act. There's always nuances and little differences attuned to each state. And so in this particular instance, I sent a copy of Senate Bill 101 to the Uniform Law Commission to ask for their formal input, and I discussed the bill. The bill was reviewed by Harry Hainsworth, who is a distinguished attorney in Minneapolis. Mr. Hainsworth was the chairman of the Uniform Law Commission committee that drafted META, and Mr. Hainsworth and I consulted on it. He had some questions. He conferred with Dan Branch, and I don't know if Dan conferred with Ms. Bannister or not, but the point is that the bill was reviewed, and Mr. Hainsworth is satisfied with its content and that it is consistent with the spirit and the intent of META. One of the big issues in this particular bill, and it was apparent during the drafting of it, or in the META, was that, each state provides for the mergers, for example, of a corporation with another corporation, or the merger with a partnership and another partnership. What's different about this bill, and is really the most appealing feature of this bill, is it allows for cross-entity transactions. It allows a partnership to become a corporation, or a limited partnership to become a corporation, or to morph into a limited liability company, for example. Typically, under the law that presently exists, one of those entities typically has to dissolve in order for that to happen. And there has to be a winding down of that entity. There could easily be adverse tax consequences and the like. There could be creditor issues that need to be addressed and so on and so forth. So under the META and under the Senate Bill 101, that would no longer be the case. Typically, you could do a seamless transition from one to the other. There's basically four types of transfers or transactions, if you will, that are created and addressed in SB 101. One is the merger, which I talked about. In this case, it's a merger between different types of entities, a corporation, a partnership, limited partnership, and a limited liability company, and so on. That's one type. The other type is a conversion, which is converting one entity into another. The holders of a limited partnership decide to convert to a corporation, for example. The other type of conversion, if you will, or transaction is called an interest exchange, which is that the interest holders, which would be shareholders, for example, partners in a limited partnership, limited liability partner, whatever the case may be, transfer their interest in the entity they hold for the interest in another, convert their interest if they're limited partners, for example, convert their interest into shares in a new corporation that they have formed. And the fourth type of transaction, which is created by SB 101 and regulated, if you will, by SB 101, is a domestication, which Senator Pascavan referred to. It's an entity that's organized in one state is going to morph into an entity in under the laws of another state, which does, I might add, I mean, there's a requirement of the bill, the state, the receiving state, if you will, or the foreign state that you're converting to has to have provisions in its law that allow the new entity to be recognized. And, you know, I think that's typically the case. But so these are the four types of basic transactions. It is a complex bill in part because you're dealing with so many different types of entities and the details of the transfer have to be addressed in each one, which they are. But the heart of it is that the interest holder, whether it be a limited partner, a shareholder, or a partner, whatever the case may be, a member in a limited liability company, their interest is protected. There's no loss of interest. It cannot be a vehicle for trying to shortchange or to diminish or demonize somebody's interest. Unless there's something in the organic documents for the corporation, the partnership, for example, it may say, you know, it requires a majority of partners for us to change business form. Well, then the law recognizes that it's going to take a majority of the partners to change business form. If the agreement is silent on it, then under the law, all partners would have to agree to change. So there's that kind of scrupulous effort to protect all the interests and to make sure that there's no diminution of interest and that this can't be used as a vehicle to shortchange a partner, another shareholder, and so on. The other major protection, these all are planned. I mean, you have to, whatever you plan to do, you have to submit a plan to the Department of Corporations. And, you know, that plan has to be adhered to, and it'll then be on file. So, you know, there are, it is a technical bill in that respect, and it is complex, it is long, and there are a number of technical requirements that are even, you know, far beyond the scope of this hearing today. But suffice to say that a great deal of effort went into carefully crafting those provisions and those protections to make sure that there is this protection of the existing business interest, whether it be shareholder, partner, limited partner, whatever. And the other thing is that these cannot be used as a vehicle to avoid creditors. That is another major protection that is, you know, throughout the various provisions of the bill. If you owe money to somebody as a limited liability company, you can't convert to a corporation and avoid that debt. That doesn't work. Again, these transactions have to be done for legitimate business purposes, and the debts that you existed with you at the time that you do the conversion are going to be carried with you to your new entity. So, again, they cannot be used in any sense, and this should be obvious, to try to avoid or evade creditors. So that's it in again, a very broad overview of a complex bill, but I can assure the committee that the bill has been aired with the Uniform Law Commission, with the chairman of the committee who drafted META. We've talked about the issues, concerns he had. The one that we discussed primarily was, again, have we made sure that the existing laws, not the new bill, but when this bill comes into play, if it's enacted, have we made sure that the existing laws under Alaska's Corporations Code, for example, under its Partnership Act, under its Limited Liability Company Act, and so on, that the provisions are all reconciled? And he is satisfied that that is the case. Ms. Bannister might be better able to testify that if she's there. But I know that concern was raised to me, and we discussed it with Dan Branch. Mr. Hainsworth discussed it with Dan Branch, and he's satisfied that is the case. So with that, I thank the committee for its patience. If I can answer questions, I certainly will.
Mr. Garrity, thank you. I know you covered at least one of the notes I'd made to myself as I was preparing for this hearing about whether there was any sort of ability through a complex set of mergers or transformations to defeat claims of creditors. You assured me that that's not the case, and I appreciate that. Maybe just laying, you know, just some groundwork. My understanding from the background material is that this is a model act, but not a uniform act. Maybe you can explain just that kind of basic difference to us.
I was trying to recall, Mr. Chairman, I apologize. No, there is a distinction. And I wish, and I'm trying to, and I rather than speculate or think out loud here, you know, I was thinking of that, and I'd be happy to submit that in writing to the record. I should know that, and my apologies. But there is a distinction, because I know I asked it one time myself. There are uniform acts, and there are model acts. Right now, as I sit here, I don't want to speculate. I'd be happy to supply that to the record early next week. And again, I'm sorry.
That's why I appreciate your caution. Actually, I think some of us could guess, but I think you're right to prepare a one-paragraph answer and send it to us. I'll make sure it gets to the other members of the committee. So thank you. Let me just also ask this question. Frequently, the way we approach big bills like this is we sort of test it among different groups. We go to practitioners. We say, you know, have you looked through this? Can you work under this set of laws? And if we get, you know, consistent testimony from practitioners around the state, then we, you know, sort of trust that what we're doing is the right thing. And it sounds like there's fairly good alignment in the business community supporting this type of act. What about consumer groups? Have you or have you become aware of any concerns expressed by consumer groups that this act somehow disenfranchises the public or puts them at a disadvantage in any way as far as dealing with the business world?
I have not, Mr. Chairman, but you touched on a good point, which I would like to address, which is that last year, after Senator Pascvan introduced the earlier version of this, I did circulate that to the Alaska Bar Association and asked them to send the bill to, I believe, the Business Law Committee and, as I recall, the Trust and Estates Committee. There could have been others, but it was at least distributed to that group, asking for comments, concerns, and so on. And I've done that before, and I've had comments, and so I do think people on those committees have received those, take them seriously. I did not get back any comments from the members of the legal community that the Alaska Bar Association sent it with. Having said that, I've not distributed it to other potential stakeholders. Have not heard any specific concerns about from consumer groups and the like, so I can't comment on that. The type of entities that this is, I think, you know, large corporations have all kinds of resources to do all kinds of things. I mean, I think this is really aimed at the smaller, close corporation, small business, small partnership, and so on. So in that sense, I think it is user-friendly and friendly to business. I don't think this is a bill that's so much aimed at, you know, the large corporations that are probably domiciled in Delaware, and so they don't have a need for this. But certainly for our economy, for our business and industry here in Alaska, we're all aware of many small businesses, a business that may start as a partnership and then become very successful and decide, you know, maybe we ought to go to get some liability protection and become a corporation. And, again, under the laws that presently exist, that partnership has to be dissolved. There could be these other consequences that Senator Pascvan touched upon. So this would, you know, allow a cross-entity conversion and do it in a seamless fashion. So in that sense, I think it's business-friendly, and I think small business-friendly. Consumers, I've not heard anything about that. I'm not aware of it. I'm trying to think what could be objectionable on the consumer level, and I can't think of anything, but that's not to say there couldn't be, but I'm not aware of it.
Thank you, and I have one last question, and then we'll turn to other members of the committee to see if there are further questions, and I'll also let committee members know that Terry Bannister from our legal services division is on the line as well to answer questions. Why, and it's just a question, why is this a matter of state law and not federal law? Is there a similar set of laws on the federal books?
I'm not aware of a similar set of law on the federal books. It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that traditionally the business organizations has been a matter that's been left up to the states. States are the ones that control the formation, organization, and legality of business organizations within their jurisdictions. That's one reason why there is a Uniform Law Commission, because obviously as America hit its economic stride at the turn of the century, one can easily imagine the trouble that businesses would have trying to cope with the different laws that might exist within different states that they want to do business in. So that was another major reason for Uniform Law Commission, was to try to standardize laws across the state borders so that business would be facilitated and not frustrated and thwarted. And largely that's taken place. I think you'll see in the comments here, the Entity Transaction Act summary, American business law, entity law in particular, is the envy of the world in terms of the flexibility and variety that American business, that the states offer entities that want to do business in their states. some states like Delaware have made a small cottage industry out of it because they've decided they want to be, a hospitable home to corporations. And so, that's one example. But on a federal level, I don't believe the federal law has ever occupied this field. Mr. Chairman, I could be wrong, but I believe this is a matter that has either been reserved to the states or that the states have occupied just by happenstance.
Thank you. Good questions. Let me turn to the members of the committee. Questions? I do then have Senator Coghill.
No, I'll wait. I have probably a question for the department when we get there. Maybe just for the commission, the existing responsibilities, it sounds to me like, maybe I'll go ahead and ask it now, Mr. Chairman. The existing responsibility between companies for liability sound like they're pretty well squared away. What about those that are extended by way of, say, of advertising? And I think that goes to your consumer questioning. If we change forms, does that release responsibility, say, for advertising purposes? So I think that was part of the consumer question you were asking, and it's just a query that I had on my part. The other thing is it took me almost to the end of the bill to figure out the difference between a domestic and a foreign relationship. I thought we were actually talking about outside the United States foreign. It looks to me like it's between states as foreign, and help me understand if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, Mr. Coghill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Mike Garrity again. You're absolutely right, Senator Coghill. Foreign is, again, that more of a term of art probably under attorneys when you're dealing with something like this. But foreign just means, Washington State, Oregon State, Delaware, and so on. Those would be foreign jurisdictions to Alaska. It doesn't mean French or British and so on. So that you're absolutely correct, and I apologize for not clarifying that earlier. In terms of liability, the short answer is no. I'm not sure the precise hypothetical that you might be thinking of or contingency, but there's no way under these conversions that you can escape liabilities. It's a continuation of the same business under a different form. But as I said, the drafters of the committee, and I'm sure other stakeholders, quite frankly, And again, during the drafting process, stakeholders are formally involved in that whole effort. They attend meetings, and their voice is heard and their voice is considered. But you can't do that. That's not the purpose of this bill. The bill doesn't allow it. And again, I defer to Ms. Bannister, who drafted it. But if I understand your question correctly, that kind of liability cannot be escaped.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. One last question, and it may be for this person or somebody else, but the conversion plan or a change of from one entity to another, because I don't think they're all conversions, right?
They're not. That's one of the types of transactions that under that would be allowed in the bill, but not the only one.
So. Who, at the end of the day, is the entity that finally says this plan meets muster? I know it's drawn up as a kind of a contractual change, or is our own Department of Community and Economical Development that says this plan fits this law?
Well, I don't believe, and I'll defer to Ms. Bannister, but I believe the law is self-executing in the sense that if the entity wants to convert from a limited liability company to a corporation, for example, they do have to submit a plan, and I'll defer to Ms. Bannister on whether there is approval, and I don't know whether the department would double-check or do some type of legal review. I think typically that would be the attorney who is doing the paperwork and giving the advice on the conversion. But keep in mind now, again, that no conversion occurs until all the members of the limited liability company consent to the conversion. So there's that check on the process. In terms of whether and I know the plan has to be filed with the Department of Corporations, but I don't know if they if they independently review it to see if it passes muster or if it's acceptable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good questions. Maybe we can just double check on that with Terry Bannister. Terry, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, and I've been listening.
Go ahead and put yourself on the record. Don't forget. Yep.
This is Terry Bannister. I work with Legislative Legal Services. And basically, the changeover, let's say a conversion, usually takes place privately among the people who are entering into it, the contracting parties. But once in a while, there's a document that is required by these to be filed under the department to register that this person is no longer this entity or that entity or has changed its purpose, things like that. But it's nothing that they automatically have to do for every transaction that occurs here. With regard to liability, the usually in each section, each type of transaction here, like a conversion, they say that, you know, what happens to the liabilities, you know, which entity has them, where how they're transferred. So there's no elimination of liability. And most consumer protection laws are drafted so they cover any person, any type of person. So whatever person you change into, it's going to be covered.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
It sounds to me like then the plan, and I misunderstood that, is more like a registration. And then if there is a difference in, say, taxing policy, the government would have to deal with that, I suppose. But it sounds more like a more or less registration or notice of change in behavior. So that's what it sounded
like. If I may comment, there's no automatic registration for these things. Sometimes, however, there are documents that need to be changed. And it is like, let's say you are no longer a corporation here and you convert it, become domesticated somewhere else, another state, then there are some documents you'd need to require to be filed here to show that you're no longer a corporation under the laws of this state. But it's not an automatic registration thing for these items. It's just wherever necessary to comply with our current statutes on who is what and where. And sometimes there are no statutes requiring that changes be registered with the department. But once in a while, there is.
But just to be clear, and I think it is clear, but just so we'll just get it point blank, these conversions, these mergers and so forth, they do not require the blessing of the state or any other person other than the entities involved.
No. Except to the extent that if the this act requires that they file a certain type of document, it has to be that type of document, and it has to meet the technical formal requirements of filing. But no, there's no blessing required.
Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any danger of companies changing their status, converting? For purposes of avoiding legal liabilities or anything like that?
Through the chair, I don't see an obvious danger. I mean, someone may be able to identify something, but because the bill identifies where the liabilities go, to whom they are transferred to and all that, I don't see an obvious problem.
I have one substantive question. Diving into the bill, the definition and the word entities used over and over and over again. I went to the definition of that word. It's on page 39 of the bill, and it covers just about every sort of business construction you can think up. But it does not cover, and I guess I'm interested now in the exclusions. It doesn't cover an individual. In the way that we most often think of people as a human individual. The word person has a different definition here, but it excludes an individual, and then testamentary trusts and so forth. Maybe someone can comment on why those, well, why a person can't be an entity.
Well, this is through the chair, Mike Garrity. Of course, an entity, a person can form a corporation. A person can form a limited liability company. So people can form entities. And once they've formed entities, I think they can take advantage of the bill, if it's enacted, to convert to another entity. But an individual by himself, you know, is not taking advantage of any business entity form that we currently recognize. And so I think that's the reason, logically, the bill would exempt them. That's not to say that an individual can't form a business entity. They can. And once they form such an entity, I think they'd be free to take advantage of the bill once it's enacted. But just an individual who's by himself and has not taken advantage of forming any entity, they can't form a partnership, obviously, because they're by themselves. But if they have not formed an entity to do business with, then they're exempted by the bill, and it wouldn't apply to them, I think, if that answers the chair's question.
If I may
go
comment.
Ahead, Ms. Canister. Yes, please.
This is Terry Bannister.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I think I don't have that answer, but it may be there's a big packet that came with the on a commentary on the Model Entity Transactions Act. I'm sure it was so they decided to do it this way, but I'm sure they may have reasons in this commentary where at those points why they have selected them. And if you want me to see if they have a reason there for that particular section, I can check. But it was a deliberate choice, but I don't know the reasons.
Well, and thank you. I understood Mr. Garrity's answer, at least as to an individual. But I guess the next, what about trusts? We spend a lot of time working on trust law in Alaska. Are the trust law practitioners happy with having a testamentary inter vivos and charitable trusts excluded from the definition of entity?
I believe they are. Again, I did send the bill, as I mentioned, Mr. Chair, last year to the Bar Association to be circulated amongst the affected groups, and that did include the trust and estate section of the bar. And there was no commentary or comments that I received back. So, to the best of my knowledge, and I don't know, I'm not a trust and estate's attorney. I don't know. Trusts and the like usually have very specific purposes, and it's not typically a business. It might be to protect wealth. It might be to pass on wealth to descendants and heirs and so on. But trusts typically aren't utilized for business. A trust can own units in a business, and I don't see any reason why a trust as an interest holder, either shares or something like that, why a trust would be prohibited from voting its shares and you know, participating in a conversion or one of these transactions covered by the Act as an interest holder. But as far as a trust itself, in my experience, typically they don't, trusts are not used as a business entity as a form for a business to operate.
Thank you, Mr. Garrity. And Senator Paskin pointed out while you were answering this that we do include in the definition of entity on page 39, line 17, a business trust or statutory trust entity. And Senator Wilikowski has a question.
A different topic, Mr.
Please.
Chair. Section 1, which says a national bank whose main office is located in the state may convert to a trust company or may merge or consolidate with a trust company. Can someone explain that to me? What is the rationale behind that?
Where are you at, Senator? I'm sorry.
Page one, existing law, page one, lines 8, 9, and 10.
If I may offer a comment, that's just a conforming amendment to make the new provisions apply to, apply to national banks. Of course, that brings up an issue, but I won't go into it right now.
Well, when you say something like that, it really makes everybody curious.
I just was thinking that the we have excluded financial institutions, and so I'm trying to figure out if that was 620. Let me check what those provisions are. Oh, 620. Oh, it's because we've deleted one of the provisions, 670. If I can find that, excuse me. It was something else. It wasn't what I was thinking. I'm looking it up.
While she's doing that, this is Mike Gary. I just wanted to clarify. When I was speaking of trust, I was thinking of a family trust when I say that they're not typically used for a business form. I'm not sure what a business trust is. But I don't believe, I've never even seen one, to be honest with you, or heard of one. The trusts that are quite often seen in Alaska are your family trusts, wealth protection trusts, and the like. And I think those are the ones I was referring to earlier, saying that they don't typically, you don't see those used for purposes of operating or running a business. With that clarification.
Mr. Chairman, Section 30 is the repealer section.
Senator Coghill has pointed us to Section 30 as the repealer section to let the members orient themselves to what's going away under this bill. Section 30 is on which page, Senator Coghill?
49. And that's where 670 is repealed.
Yep.
As well.
Yep, goes away. Very good. Other questions? Comments or concerns about SB 101? I don't foresee us walking through the bill page by page. It is 50 pages. And on the other hand, I do want to give members plenty of time to have the bill in their possession. Last year, Senator Pascan, what was the progress of the legislation you filed that was similar to this?
It basically got into a hearing before Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And then after further discussion with the Department of Law and then the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, everyone just said, look, there are so many little nuances, and, you know, every time you turned a page, there just was a little micro analysis that needed to be completed. And so rather than advance it and then try to reform it later, it was deemed prudent to just pull it back, have a complete workup over the following 8-9 months, and it's actually been almost a year now that they've been working on it. And again, a lot of work at the national level and at the local level has occurred to the point where I believe we have a uniformity of interest across the board that this is the product that is best for Alaska. Again, under a model law as compared to a uniform law concept, using the Model Entities Transaction Act, incorporating the nuances of Alaska law, and saying this is the way we can accommodate it for Alaska.
We do have Mr. Hoppiger here. Why don't we have him come forward? He's decided to testify and represents the administration. It'd be good to get their perspective while we're getting our first overview of the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Put yourself on the record and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, sir.
For the record, my name is Don Haberger and I'm with the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing of the Department of Commerce. Mr. Chair, my testimony today really centers around the interim process. And as I was listening to testimony here, if there were some delays, I believe the sponsor could rightly say it was the department's fault. One of the things that we were looking at, of course, is a number of those nuances. and how we got engaged in the process, and maybe I should explain that, the nuances between the model act that we were given under SB 304 last year to look at, and some of the nuances that we have in Alaska corporate law. And I am not the person to look at those nuances, but we have, I think, a stellar staff. In one case, we have an individual that's been with the division 30 years and has been in the corporation section for that time. And using some of those resources and looking at some of those nuances, our staff did peel apart 304. And through our association or liaisons with the Department of Law, Mr. Branch, as he's been named, we've been working on those nuances to kind of address some of the issues that we saw. And just for example, case in point, I think it was on page 2, section 5, for example. One of the ones that I just remember we were discussing is how SB 304 did affect something in another piece of statute as cemetery associations and nonprofits. So clearly, as all parties were working together, our issues and nuances were addressed. And the second thing that I think we were primarily interested in is our role as a division. And I think Senator Coghill asked a question that was germane to that, looking at this legislation and what we can provide. We felt we had an appropriate administrative role. We took a serious look at if a document comes into us, how do we, if you will, grade that document, what is that criteria? That is clearly spelled out in SB 101, and they kind of overlap with previous versions. And we looked at each of those pieces. We believe we can, if you will, grade a document. We certainly don't have any legal staff directly within the division. We made sure that we didn't have to interpret those kinds of things. And we believe after that review, we have a piece of legislation that if the legislature decides to implement, we can handle on our half, on our side, I should say. And then probably the last comment, Mr. Chair and committee members, is just kind of the impact that we believe we may receive. Staff did call the two jurisdictions that have implemented it, and they asked them. The state of Kansas didn't have numbers for us. Idaho did. They thought about 200 entities took advantage in their state. Looking at some of the activity when we had a similar entity change, looking or talking to staff, we had 40 to 50 that maybe took advantage of that. So somewhere in that range is probably an appropriate number for activity for the state of Alaska. A couple of years ago, in fact, last year, due to some backlog issues with corporations, we did hire new staff. Looking at that implementation of additional staff and looking at this particular load, we think we can absorb activity if it's passed. With that, Mr. Chair, I conclude my testimony.
Questions for Mr. Heberger? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed the timeline on implementing regulations is July 1, 2013. I'm just curious, that's a very prescriptive timeline, and I'm just curious what the scope of regulations would be. You're dealing with probably a couple of different titles here. Can you give me some idea what you anticipate after having gone through some of the nuances of the bill, what might have to be brought out regulation-wise?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill. Actually, we think it may be relatively simple. We think it perhaps is just setting fees for the particular documents that we receive and that interaction with the entity or their representative and the division. So we don't see a large process. We think we can clearly get those fees set by regulation in time.
Okay, thank you. That's, when I saw that, I thought, maybe it's going to be twice the size of this lot. So.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate your testimony. We will hold this bill over for further consideration from the committee, but good presentation today by the bill sponsor. And with that, we'll set 101 aside and turn now to the other bill before us today, which is HB 7. And we have Mr. Luckup here. If you come forward, please. The there, yep. Mr. Luck, welcome to the committee. And you prepared for us a CS that is / R. If I could have a motion to adopt that.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilkowski's moved the CS before us. Is there objection?
I'll object.
For the purposes of discussion, let's go ahead and do that. There is an objection for the purposes of discussion. Let's turn to Mr. Luckup. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Luckup, Assistant Revisor of Statutes for the Alaska Legislature. I was directed to prepare a new CS that basically stair-stepped down quantities of this of these synthetic THCs that could be added to organic material, and with a top level of greater than 12 grams remaining a Class C felony for distributions, basically, and then less than 12 grams up down to 6 grams being a Class A misdemeanor, and then 6 grams or less being a Class B misdemeanor, which is the same as possession of 1 ounce of marijuana as a 6-degree controlled substance, misconduct involving controlled substance. I was also directed to establish an effective date of July 1st, which is in the bill, and to ensure that someone who's 16 or 17 years of age, a juvenile, wouldn't be automatically waived into adult court for any of these violations, and that's true. You would a Class A, the only way a juvenile could be waived in adult court for possession of these synthetic THCs is if they sold the synthetic THC to a person that was at least 3 years younger than them. So a 17-year-old would have to be selling to a 14-year-old or less for us to get to an offense. And that's an unclassified felony, and that's an offense, the only offense that would result in automatic waiver of a juvenile into adult court. I was instructed to that I should retain that position due to the difference in age. I could also give you some advice on model acts and uniform acts, if you'd like.
One bill at a time. One bill at a time. But thank you. I appreciate that. So let's just go ahead and walk through the bill so folks are oriented to it. The first changes are on page 2. What's happening there on page 2, lines 7 to 13?
Through the chair, page 2, lines 10 through 13, starting right above that, instead of the 3 grams is where the original bill had language that 3 grams or more automatically became a violation of the statute. I provided an exception to that 3-gram provision and provided that you possess 12 grams or more of a Schedule 3A controlled substance listed in these new synthetic THCs that we're creating that has been sprayed on or otherwise applied to tobacco and herb or another organic material.
Mr. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Getting back to the question that we had at the last hearing, is this 12 grams of the sprayed-on substance or 12 grams of the overall substance?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's the overall substance. 12 grams of
organic.
The aggregate material.
So if somebody sprayed it on a brick,
It wouldn't be an organic material in this case, so the brick's not going to, I guess we'd have to think of another really heavy substance, sailor bread or something like that.
Bale of hay. How about teak?
Yeah.
If you spray it on teak, you're going to weigh the teak.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it would be allowed. Our weights for when we use a term dealing with, for example, the lead-in talks about the aggregate weight. That aggregate weight means the substance the way you find it and including what it's a part of.
Let me just say, I mean, while we're on this, because, this clearly this will be litigated if it goes to court, and I'm on page 2, lines 10 to 13, and it reads now, for the record, 12 grams or more containing a Schedule 3A controlled substance listed in AS 1171-160F-716 that has been sprayed on or otherwise applied to tobacco and herb or other organic material. So it's not 12 grams or more of the Schedule 3A controlled substance, the listed chemical. It's that 12 grams or more. Then you jump down to applied tobacco. So it is the entire. They're going to try to push it off onto the controlled substance, but the way it reads 12 grams or more of the tobacco or herb that has the substance on it.
Right. I was through the chair, I was instructed to go to basically 4 packets of that, those 3-gram packets that people were describing that you can purchase over the counter, and go to that amount.
So that's change 1. Change 2 is on, we're next on to page 3.
And again, I have the same exception from the 3-gram. You know, this is the 3 grams or less, basically, requirement from the previous version of the bill that provided that was a Class A misdemeanor. And now we're saying, with similar language to the earlier amendment, at 12 grams, but more than 6 grams. So anywhere between 2 packets up to 4 packets. And it's the same aggregate weight amount with the same conditions as before. It's got to be sprayed on or otherwise applied to an organic material.
And that's the A misdemeanor version. And finally, on page 4, lines 23 to 26.
Again, the same concept applied here. And going with 6 grams or less, which would be 2 packets, gets to a Class B misdemeanor, which is what we also provide as the penalty for any use or display of marijuana in public or a possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana.
And then finally, on page 4, beginning on line 29, what is that doing?
Page 4, that's the from the original bill, that's where we classify these substances, these 10 new substances that we're adding. That's unchanged from the previous version of the bill. And then page 6, line 2, is the effective date of July 1st, 2011.
Very good. And where, if at all, do we deal with the possibility that someone possesses the chemical itself without having applied it to a tobacco or an herb or something else?
Through the chair, that remains in the bill. For example, with the on page 2, line 2, or actually line 3, 25 or more tablets, ampules, or sorets containing a Schedule 3A or 4A controlled substance were retaining the pure form of the substance in those levels.
So it's a 3A substance, but does it come in tablets, ampules, or sorets?
It can. It can be in a liquid format. It can also be in a solid format.
And just for the purposes of discussion, if you have, let's just say, gram of the pure chemical, what level of crime is that?
It depends upon it. You can be classified two different ways, and I should add to my previous amendment or in my previous testimony with regards to if the 3 grams or more of a Schedule III controlled substance isn't in the special form.
Okay, well, when you say
it's not
form,
sprayed.
Okay, let's just say the pure chemical.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If it's also in a format that is not in tablets, ampules, or charrettes,
right,
and that's a number
right.
concept, then we go to the gram concept of I. 3 grams or more containing a Schedule III A controlled
got
substance.
It. Got it.
Except a controlled substance in a form listed in 2.
Got it.
So I've got it covered, I think, both ways. Depending upon the format the drug arrives in, it's either covered with the 25 or more, or it's covered with the 3 grams or more. If you possess 1 gram, you're going to be going down into the Class A misdemeanor.
Got it. Clear as a bell, at least to me. Thanks. Mr. Luckett, other questions from members of the committee for Mr. Luckett? Don't hear or see any. We closed public testimony. We also, just to let the committee know, have Douglas Moody on the line to answer questions from the public defender, and Orrin Dim on the line to answer questions from the Alaska State Lab. Very good. Thank you. Mr. Luckett, Senator Pascan.
Well, I don't know whether possibly the person in the state lab, I mean, how is it that they, you know, when we get to page 5 of the bill where we're adding the 10 substances or the, you know, the additional, how is it that they can test it and determine specifically which one that's on here as compared to one of the just minute derivations that are going to pop up almost immediately from what it sounds like?
Mr. Dim?
How can they differentiate?
Mr. Dim, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Did you understand Senator Pasfan's question?
I did. For the record, my name is Orrin Dim. I am the forensic laboratory manager. Through the chair, Senator Pascavan, we have the instrumentation here at the laboratory to uniquely identify those substances listed. That's not a problem.
Thank you.
There you go. Further questions for the lab? Don't hear or see any. We have the bill before us. We've amended the bill to take care of some of the concerns expressed by members of the committee in previous hearings. We also have a concurrent resolution for a title change that will go along with the bill when it leaves the committee. Is there any other testimony from members of the committee? Hearing and seeing none, I'd solicit a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 7, which has been identified as version /R, from this committee to the next committee of referral, individual recommendations.
I'll remove my objection to the adoption of the CS, and that puts us before it. So then we have Senator Pasfan's motion to move the bill. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, the bill will go. And I think we need a separate motion for the concurrent resolution, Senator Pasfan.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the Senate concurrent resolution. Is this number 1?
Does it get a number?
It doesn't get a number yet. I'll do the final, and then your committee staff will take it to the clerk.
It's identified as version /A before us, but I would so move that we move that /A.
The title change resolution.
Yes, the title change.
I think the motion's pretty clear. A little rugged, but I think the motion's clear. Senator Coghill, any objection?
No objection.
Don't hear or see any, then the resolution will move on as well. With that, the bill leaves the committee. On to the next committee referral. Nothing else come before us. We're done. Look at that. 20 minutes early.